When the wise men had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "take your child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So Joseph got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more." After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who were trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, "He will be called a Nazarene." This is the word of the Lord. Here's one of the mental pictures from my personal Christmas 2004 album. It was the school's Christmas assembly. The students were wired, the teachers were exhausted, Dave Barr's choirs were angelic, and our principal was tense. The freshman advisor had composed a skit that held the whole assembly together. It was a strange marriage of the movies The Best Christmas Pageant Ever and Barbershop. The cast assembled below a sign that read, "Barbershop, Hair Jordan Manager," although manager was misspelled and actually read manger. The characters spoke in thick Chicago African-American dialect. Mary, limping from an ankle injury in last week's basketball game, was very pregnant and very much out of school uniform. Joseph, in baggy pants that were threatening to slip to the floor at any moment, seemed a little distant and perplexed by his wife-to-be. The students loved it. But I could see the principal pacing nervously and shooting worried glances at the freshman advisor. And although I have to admit that seeing her so nervous was just a little bit entertaining, I understood her discomfort. After all, these were not really the values our school encourages: pregnant teens, young marriages, uneducated speaking. At the Thanksgiving assembly, the dialogue all came straight out of the Bible. Maybe we should have stuck with that. It was so much cleaner. Now, I'll be the first to admit, I enjoy the cleanliness of Christmas, the lights, a house full of spicy scented candles, immaculately wrapped presents. On Christmas Eve, after a late night with my family, I made Eric detour from Lakeshore Drive to Michigan Avenue just so that we could have the street and the lights to ourselves. I wrote this sermon listening to the Worcester Cathedral Choir singing lullabies for the baby Jesus. And as far as I'm concerned, it's only a perfect Christmas if we get a dusting of snow to mask the dirt of the city for a few hours. And as for the Christmas story, who can't love a Christmas pageant with Mary's rosy cheeks, some straggling shepherds, and Josiah Friesen stealing the show as a pink-tummied cow? A Christmas story where even Herod joins in the final lullaby to the baby Jesus. And all of these beautiful things that we tuck into our personal memory bank each Christmas, school assemblies, lights on Michigan Avenue, the perfect Christmas cow, they are good. But it is a good thing to see light in dark winters, to see kids enjoy a moment of fun and humor during school, and to watch our children Learn the story of Jesus by heart at the front of the church. But I can't shake the image of the principal pacing, because she was on to something. Christmas is not clean. And much as we marvel at the lights and the music, much as we smile and thank God for the earnestness of children, those things are not the true wonder of the story we're celebrating. The true wonder is that the story is messy. It is not clean and cool and clear. It is the story of God being born into the murky, muddy mess that is our world and our lives. It is the story of a baby born to poor parents, practically homeless, camped out in the stable at an inn. The cows did not have pink tummies, and the shepherds probably hadn't bathed in months. And tucked back into a dirty stall, a young woman had a baby who cried like all babies do. And according to Matthew, the birth is not the only messy part. Matthew suggests that Mary and Joseph stayed in Bethlehem for a while. And sometime later, probably a year or so, wise men came to bring the baby gifts. But they stopped for directions in Jerusalem and attracted the attention of Herod. There's not much we can do to Herod to make him an acceptable part of the clean version of Christmas. By all accounts, the Bible and other sources, he was a cruel, dictatorial puppet of the Roman government, and he had a tendency to get jealous. The idea of a new king? Absolutely not. He wouldn't stand for it. When the wise men took off under the cover of night and refused to give him the address of the Holy Family, Herod did what any terrible tyrant, ancient or modern, might do. Human life was expendable in his pursuit of power. So he commanded that all boys under 2 in Bethlehem be killed. And you can guess that the soldiers didn't take much time to check the age of the child and the gender of the child. It was an act so terrible that Matthew describes even the bones of Rachel, the mother of the nation, buried near Bethlehem, crying out. Imagine pictures of weeping, keening women after a bomb goes off in a marketplace in Iraq, killing their children. Multiply that by a whole village. We usually do not include this part in our Christmas pageants. Maybe we should. One preacher suggests that rather than putting Christ back in Christmas, Christians need to think about putting Herod back into Christmas. Herod is Matthew's reminder of how messy this whole incarnation business really is. It's a reminder that Jesus barely escapes, that the neighborhood playgroup is killed, and Mary and Joseph flee to Egypt, catching their breath and grieving for the neighbors as they go. It's a reminder that Jesus could have been killed just as easily as any other 2-year-old in town. And sometimes our clean version of Christmas covers over the mess, just like a good snowfall. We are here this morning, not just with visions of sugar plums and all that. We are coming to the end of a year that has included war and death and disappointment, broken promises, shattered relationships, and the general aches and pains of living. Now, maybe the best thing we can do at Christmas is to let it be an escape from all of that, for us to hunker down with a hot drink, look at a well-lit tree, and let the snow cover over the mess that we'll face on Monday morning. But that is not honest to what is truly happening with us. We cannot forget the battles we have lost, the grandmother who is absent, the hurts that inevitably come with loving people. And that's not the story Matthew tells either. Matthew and the other Gospels tell the story of a God who comes in the flesh, just like us. A baby born in the first century equivalent of the Motel 6 parking lot maintenance shed. God came down as a baby who escaped death narrowly, who was vulnerable, whose story from the very beginning included the messiness of the world. Jesus was just as human as we are. And that means, just like us, from the moment he was born, he was headed for death. His first breath was the start of finite breaths that would lead to and end with his last. Sometimes at Christmas, we hear people talking about the journey from the manger to the cross. It's important that we don't forget Jesus was human throughout that entire journey. John Calvin, writing about the massacre in Bethlehem, says, "Christ, having just been born, begins to be crucified for us, both in himself and in his members. Those innocents in Bethlehem are part of the accumulating weight of the world that Jesus was carrying, even before he took his first wobbly step. Every stage of his life didn't just lead to the cross. At every stage, he also carried the weight of our sinful and messy world." And Mary, like every other mother, sang her lullabies to one who was on a journey toward death. But Mary also sang to a God who was willing to enter our reality and die with us and for us. I started this sermon with one mental picture from my Christmas 2004 album. Here's another, and it's really the first Christmas moment for me this year. 2 days before my school assembly, I stood with my mother-in-law's large, warm family in a cold northern Wisconsin wind. We were in the cemetery to bury Orville Moe, age 92, known to his 8 kids as Pop and to his 17 grandkids as Papa. After my husband and his cousins slid the coffin into place, after the pastors read words about resurrection, we finally sang "Away in a Manger." We sang this lullaby to Pop and Papa. Not just because the Moe family always sings in joy or in grief. Not because it was almost Christmas. Not just because it was his favorite. We sang this lullaby for the dying because God knows this pain of death. God knows that it is an ugly, messy thing when even a precious life well lived is lost. God knows because through Jesus Christ, God came to us, was one of us, lived our life, and walked with us toward death. It is in that lullaby for the dying baby Jesus that our journey with him begins. From death to new life. Thanks be to God.